Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City with me, Frances Nesbitt, and of course Mags Morrissey. Remember, you can get in touch with the show by text to 086 353 7782 or by phone on 776 2777. We'd love to hear from you, so feel free to send in any questions or comments that you might have. Today on the show, we'll be talking to John Brown of Grogan & Brown Artisan Butchers here in Kilkenny. We'll be talking all about meats and Christmas meats and dishes. In the kitchen, we'll be looking at some seasonal ingredients, and we might even get to taste some mince pies. And then in the garden, we'll be back in the potting shed, I think, this week to do some inside jobs now that the frost has definitely taken hold. Mags, how are you? How was your week?
Good. Busy week. November flew by, as it always does, and now it's December.
1st of December. Yeah. I think we're allowed to mention the C word now. We're allowed to say Happy Christmas.
Oh, we're allowed to eat mince pies now. I think that's always the first, that's my start of Christmas, actually, is mince pies.
And you were saying you noticed a bit of the traffic on the way in, things have kind of picked up, there's a lot of people around.
Yeah, a lot of people just like, well, I'm sort of a little bit intolerant of slow drivers.
Oh dear.
Yeah, because I'm mostly very tolerant. Except, I just kind of feel if they just weren't there in my way, it'd be fine. If they just moved to the side, then I have no problem with them.
These are people out enjoying their Christmas shopping, having a nice day out and thinking of presents. Oh, Lord. Oh, my God. John, how are you?
Very good.
Thanks a million for coming into us.
No problem.
How's things down in Grogan & Brown? Are you seeing all of these crowds as well?
Busy. It's been a busy year so far. But we can't complain. We're going fairly well.
Excellent, brilliant.
We're happy out.
Yeah, and are people in starting to talk about what they're getting in for Christmas, or is it still a regular trade?
The first inquiry I had for Christmas was early September.
Good God!
And one lady, she ran in the door. She's like, "Am I too late to order my turkey
in September?
It's the first week in September. I think you're fairly okay." But yeah, no, it's.
But we might have to charge you a bit extra now because you've left it that late.
Yeah, they're coming in thick and fast now, so it's going good.
Brilliant.
People are organised and involved, but.
And is it still the case that a lot of people come into the butcher to order the turkey to the specific weight they want, or are more and more people leaving it last minute? Or
No. Anybody that I think that kind of tends to shop in the butchers, they're fairly well organised.
Yeah.
They kind of come in with a good idea as to what they want, you know, and we just try to help them along the way in terms of weights and sizes to suit the crowd they're having across for dinner.
So you'd be able to advise them if they tell you how many they're cooking for?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
And is there an average kind of size of the turkey that people are going for?
I suppose the most popular size would be kind of, you know, kilo weight, looking in around 5 kilos, 10 to 12 pounds, maybe 12 to 14 pounds.
Right.
Most people would tend to kind of, you know, cook for a crowd on Christmas Day and have enough for the following day, and of course
the day
the
after.
Turkey sandwich.
Oh, the turkey sandwiches on Christmas night. Oh, jeez, I love the turkey sandwich.
Yeah, so.
It's a real highlight of the day for me. The wambos in the evening, yeah, you know, because the stress is kind of gone. Maybe you've had a glass of something nice,
yeah.
And the Stephen's Day dinner, I was saying last week as well, like that's even nicer than the Christmas Day
I
dinner.
Think so. Well, the pressure's off, you know, so it's a good day too.
And the hams, so it's turkey and ham, it's still predominantly.
It is. Look, it's without doubt it's the most popular dish on the day, obviously. But there are other alternatives. You know, some people, there seems to be, you know, there's obviously a bit of a turn of the economy again.
Mm-hmm.
People are starting to look back at, you know, the real traditional dish would be goose.
Oh.
You know.
Yeah.
But they're quite expensive, and you know, the yield of meat that you get off them, you wouldn't be feeding 12 people off a goose now.
I have a few geese, actually, yeah. So I know exactly.
Yeah, no, they're fabulous flavour. It's a fabulous flavour, but in terms of, you know, if you have a big crowd, it wouldn't be the thing to go for. But you get people that will also look for, you know, game. You've got pheasant and venison is quite popular at Christmas.
Mm.
And again, you know, beef, rib of beef on the bone, it's very popular at Christmas.
Yes.
It's a real treat, rib on the bone. And it's visually impressive too, you know.
Mm.
French trim, yeah, it's lovely.
I do have had I love messing around with that big cut of meat that you get in the rib on the bone. And normally I'd do it in the pizza oven out the back because it gets that kind of radiated heat and it picks up a bit of smokiness. And oh, it's a fabulous piece of meat.
It's very much a man's thing.
Yeah, it really is.
Really a Flintstone moment.
There's no disguising the fact that this was once a beast when you're dealing with a rib on the bone. Yeah.
I think I'd find it hard not to have turkey at Christmas. Well, I'd like all of those things. Even goose, we'd have it maybe a few days after Christmas for something. But I'd find it very hard to actually pick not to have turkey on Christmas Day.
Yeah, it's, I think, you know, as I said, it is traditional. What you'd find with people, you know, they have to have, I don't want to say they have to have, but they want to have the whole bird on the table. You know, there are alternatives with, like, some people prefer breast meat. You have less weight, less waste. You have a cleaner cut of meat, but you don't have that visually impressive turkey on the table Christmas Day, you know, which is what a lot of people look for.
I think these days with Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that, the Christmas dinner must be much slower now getting to the table than it used to be a few years ago. Because everybody has to whip out the camera to have a photograph taken of the bird on the way.
Yeah. And the filters involved in the video.
Wait till I get this right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, I suppose at least they're not downloading the picture off the internet and uploading it. So it's not too late if people did want to get the orders in.
Oh, God, no. Yeah. No, geez, we're only starting at the moment, really.
Great.
The next couple of weeks now, they'll really start.
Yeah.
This weekend, the next 2 weeks, they'll really come in thick and fast. But we'd still be taking orders up until, you know, the 20th, December 21st. It's a guarantee. You know, and
do people pay at the time they order, or do they pay when they pick up the bird?
Generally, no. We would just take a deposit just to secure the order, and you would settle the rest on the day. Yeah.
Oh, the last thing you want is to be left with a whole load of birds on Christmas Eve when.
Well, that's generally, it can happen.
Yeah.
But you know, most people are A1.
And on the bird, then, is there options in like white or free range or bronze, or like what way do you do it in the shop?
We would carry a number of different options, and something that would kind of suit everybody, you know, depending on what crowd they want. Or, you know, some people prefer free range over a barn rare turkey. I would source most of my free range turkeys from Gerard Brennan in Ballyellis Free Range in Johnstown. I dealt with Gerard last year. For the first year we started out doing him, and in my 24, 25 years butchering, I've never seen a bird anything like it. Fabulous produce. So again, I was out with Gerard last week and was looking at the stock that he has, and so he will be supplying us again this year. He would have a number of different breeds that would kind of yield different weights. He would have the Euro 1 Mini, I think it is. It's the, you know, around 10 to 12 pounds of weight. Roly Poly, 14 to 18. Just different breeds that will yield different sizes. Bronze turkeys, we'd also stock bronze turkeys. But I think, you know, taking on a bronze turkey, again, talk to your butcher, because the mistake a lot of people make is the cooking time with a bronze turkey is a lot shorter than, you know, your normal hybrids. And it can be overcooked very easily.
Why is that? Sorry.
I don't know. For some reason, it's like a 10 to 12 pound bronze turkey, if I recall last year, could take maybe an hour and a half. And it sounds like that's ridiculously low, and it's potentially dangerous. But that's just how it is. I think it's the fact that it's a narrower breast.
Have they a bigger cavity or something?
I don't even have a bigger cavity, but the breast is not as broad a breast as the hybrids. The hybrids would be, you know, they would be bred for a greater yield of
for
meat.
White meat, kind of.
So you'd have a lot more a yield of meat on it. So you're almost halving the cooking time on it.
I think when you're working out your calendar or your timetable for Christmas Day, you know, get advice on the kind of bird that you've got. No better advice than where you're buying it from. And then the best friend of every cook in the kitchen, particularly when you're dealing with poultry or cooking something that you don't normally do, is the temperature probe. Like, they're very inexpensive, and if you put it into the meat, it'll tell you when it's done, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another thing that we do, and you don't have to go to the expense of actually buying a temperature probe. Like any good butcher, ourselves obviously, we supply you with a pop-up timer.
Oh, very good.
So it's almost like a temperature probe that you place it into the breast of the turkey until it's flush, and the little red pop-up timer will pop up once it reaches the core temperature of, I think, 72 or 3 degrees.
Yeah.
You know, so it avoids undercooking and avoids overcooking.
Yeah.
It's just the turkeys dry out.
And, like, you can take it out of the oven if it's an hour ahead of schedule, you can take it out, cover in a bit of tinfoil.
Oh,
that's going to be fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's rather than leaving it in the oven.
That's another big thing with cooking any meat is the importance of resting the meat. And the important thing, another thing is, which a lot of people make the mistake on, is to take your meat out of the fridge an hour before you're going to pop in the oven to bring it to room temperature. You know, and the resting for at least half an hour afterwards, it allows the muscles to relax. You know,
you're banging that counter.
Am I banging
that's
the counter?
That's a point that you really want to make. You really feel strongly about that.
Yeah,
it's like anything. If you were shoved in the fridge yourself and then taken out and then thrown somewhere really, really hot, you know.
But it's the same when you're cooking a steak.
Yeah.
You know, you take a steak straight from the fridge onto a hot pan and you don't leave it rest, you could be eating the sole of your shoe. You know, you pay good money for a good steak, cook it properly. You know, it's simple things, really.
So, with the steak or something small like that, you go to Grogan and Brown, artisan butcher, you find, get a nice piece of meat, you splash out a little bit maybe on yourself, something special, you bring it home. What way should we be treating it then? It goes in the fridge to store from the day before, but then how long should I be taking it out before I cook it?
Before you cook it? I would take it up to an hour beforehand.
Yeah.
I can always bring it to room temperature.
Yeah.
To me, that's key.
Yeah.
And with a steak, I mean, what I would do is, you know, onto a hot pan, but I think the important thing is to oil the steak and not the pan.
Oh.
Yeah. Onto a dry pan, I would always put it onto.
Right.
So the steak is oiled.
Right.
You know, if you have a hot pan, you put oil onto it, then straight away you're reducing the heat of the pan, the core heat. And too much oil and the steak almost stews in itself, so it toughens up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a very good tip. So, very good tip.
But again, once it's cooked to whatever your liking is, off the pan onto a plate, cover with tin foil for 10 minutes. It'll still hold its heat, but it'll retain the juices. It takes the juices back into it.
Yeah.
You know?
And
it allows the muscles to relax.
Very good.
And that's the key to it. Simple things.
And would there be many people coming in looking for the alternative? So, you know, like Mag said, they don't, not big fans of the turkey, or they're looking forward to something the day after Stephen's Day. Would people be splashing out on a nice cut of steak for themselves as well? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The alternatives, apart from steak, venison seems to be fairly popular. Again, pheasant. We also do a wild game pie mix, you know, seasonal stuff.
Yeah. I like the sound of that.
Racks of lamb, fabulous, always a good seller. You know,
even at Christmas.
Yeah.
Not just for Easter.
Not at all. So spiced beef is another thing.
I was going to ask
I got your spiced beef last year for the 27th or 28th, and it was really nice.
Very good.
It was one of the nicest ones I've had, actually.
That's good to hear.
And
it's your own recipe, the spice mix?
Yeah.
Yes, they wouldn't tell me it at all. Very secretive.
Secret recipe.
And do you make it in the
absolutely,
shop?
Absolutely, yeah. That'll be made at the moment, actually. It's a bit of a long process, you know, curing the beef and spicing it, and it needs to be spiced for a long period of time. First, you know, to kind of penetrate the meat.
Yeah, and how long roughly would you have it in there?
We would have pickled beef 2 weeks ago. That'll take the best part of 2 weeks, and we'll start rolling in the spice now from next week.
Yeah,
and sealing it, and it'll be up until Christmas.
Wow,
in the spices, you know, really draw in the flavour.
Yeah,
the spices.
I heard a butcher saying recently that for him Christmas starts once they start mixing up the spices for the spiced beef. And that might be mid-November.
Some places even earlier.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's funny, and once you get that smell of pimento and the cloves, that's really Christmas for us, isn't it?
That's fantastic. I love spiced beef, but I think I'm the only one in my house, so I rarely.
Seems to be one of those things. Either, you know, you love it or you hate it.
Mm.
A lot of people would have it for Christmas Eve.
Oh.
It seems to be the kind of tradition, from what we're hearing anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
It's a Cork...
Very much a Cork tradition.
I never actually heard of it until I went to college in Cork.
Yeah.
The English market would do a great trade.
But they would say that's 12 months a year in there.
Yes, yeah.
It's only a Christmas thing here, but it's 12 months a year in Cork.
It's a really nice meat to serve because it's very lean. If you're looking for something, and it's very different to what your turkey and everything, so something very different for a few days after Christmas.
Yeah. It's one of those things that it's hard to walk past the kitchen table. Mm. You always cut a little sliver off of it.
I'm full now. You go into the kitchen with your empty plate. Oh, there's another little sliver left on the board. I might just have a little.
It's too hard to walk past that.
I'm getting hungry here, but we're going to have to take a break. We'll listen to some ads and we'll be back in a few minutes. John, will you stick around for another few minutes?
Sure.
Great. We'll be talking some more to John from Grogan and Brown Butchers here in Kilkenny. And if you have any questions that you'd like to put to John, you can text them into us or give us a call. You can text us on this number. Text us on 086 353 7782. Call us now on 056 7762777. And you're very welcome back to The Kitchen Garden with me, Francis Nesbitt. And I'm here with Mags Morrissey and John from Grogan and Brown in Lochboy here in Kilkenny. Thanks to those who have contacted the show. And remember, you can send in questions or comments to us by text on 086 353 7782 or by phone on 776 2777. During the break, we were talking about fat and fat on rashers. Mags, you had a couple of pigs come back from the butcher today.
Yes, and I intentionally didn't overfeed mine because I didn't want them to be too fatty, because I sell some of the meat and I know people don't want too much fat and I don't really want piles of it, only a little bit, and I know how much, you know, it does add to the flavour of it, but I'm not going to eat a huge big strip of fat either. So, but you know what, they still have quite a lot of fat, even though they looked very slim. Actually, they were probably, compared to the other pigs that were going in, yours and stuff, they looked like, you know, a bit scrawny actually. But now the meat is absolutely gorgeous. I've just tried to cook some rashers earlier and I brought you in a little bit. The meat is lovely, but there is, you know, a significant portion of fat on it. And that's not bad for us, but I suppose we are conditioned to thinking we shouldn't eat fat. And it's nice and crispy actually. It's really nice, like kind of cracklingy type stuff. That's lovely. But maybe I would like a little bit more meat and a tiny bit less fat.
I did hear somebody say recently though that fat won't make you fat.
Well, that's true. That is true. You know,
sugar makes you fat.
Sugar.
Yeah. But the outdoor breeds, you keep yours outdoor.
Yeah.
So I suppose naturally they would lay down more fat to kind of keep themselves warm.
They would.
Outside.
And we kind of had maybe a coolish autumn, so maybe they laid down a bit more this year, even though they didn't look fat. So I'm not sure. But I suppose we kind of maybe need to remember that we don't need to eat huge quantities of meat. If we just eat a small amount of really nice, tasty meat, that's better. Oh God, there's a butcher sitting beside me though. But, you know, we need, with everything and stuff, if we eat good quality something, you don't need buckets of it. So,
John, what would the consumer's reaction be now to kind of fatty pork or fatty meats in the shop?
I suppose we need to look at it from the consumer's point of view. If we're selling them something, you know, per kilo weight, you know, if 40 to 50% of that is in fat, you know, that's in their eyes a waste of money.
Actually, there's a text just in there. Do you pay for the fat as well as the meat? But of course you do.
You need the fat.
Yeah.
You know, for the meat. You know, it's like if you're cooking a steak, it's important that the fat is there for the flavour. You don't have to eat the fat afterwards.
Mm.
You trim the fat after it's cooked as opposed to trimming it before it's cooked.
Mm, there's another great tip.
So,
and we'll get you to record some of these tips for us, John. We can play them out on a regular basis.
Isn't that meat really...
We're all getting distracted here because Mags is handing out chunks of bacon. That's very tasty.
It's very good.
Mm. Isn't it?
It's very good.
Mm. So...
But we said it before that it's, you know, the variety of the diet, I think, when the pigs are outside makes a significant difference as well. So when somebody comes into the shop, they're buying a steak, they don't want something that's completely lean. They want a bit of fat in there because
there's options. Mm. You know, not every steak has, you know, 20% fat or whatever.
Mm.
There's leaner steaks, there's fatter steaks, you know. But the more fat you have, that's where the flavour is. With your ribeye steak, you'll always have good marbling in the middle of it, you know, which tends to have, obviously, just a bit of fat is there, but that's where the flavour is. You got your strip loin steak, which would have a nice covering of fat on the top of it, but then you have got your fillet steak, which would have little or no fat, but it lacks flavour for that reason.
And a lot of people think that's the one that you aim for, like if you're saving up for a steak, you get yourself a fillet.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't think so, in my opinion.
Mm.
You know, okay, it's the most tender muscle in the body because it's not used, but it has no flavour.
Mm.
You know, and like any muscle in the animal, the harder worked muscles are the ones with the most flavour. But the harder worked muscles need a bit more TLC, a bit of work involved in cooking them.
Which piece of steak would you go for now, if you were?
I like a bit of ribeye, personally. But then again, I like the fat.
I'd be watching,
some people think, you know, T-bone steak is the king of steaks. Personally, I don't think so. You know, you've got actually two cuts of meat on the one bone. And those two cuts of meat take two different temperatures to cook. So it's very difficult to get one right. Mm. You can overdo one and undo the other and vice versa. So I would always, you know, encourage either go strip loin or fillet. That's my opinion.
I would have been a T-bone person now, yeah. I have to say.
Well, I enjoy playing with the bone, but, you know, and chewing on the bone when you're finished with it. But when you put it like that, they are two very different
muscles. They're two different cuts.
Yeah.
They take two different temperatures, two different ways of cooking.
Mm.
But it's on the one steak, so you're going to miss out somewhere.
There was a time when you couldn't get T-bone, of course, back in the bad days, a few years ago. And we were all nervous about the bone. I did miss them during that year or two.
Yes, so did I, actually.
We're going to have you back to talk just about steaks, because we're ignoring the Christmas meats here. We barely touched on goose at all. Some people are still going for those. Mm. There's a Kilkenny supplier of goose, isn't
there? Yeah, we would stock Mary Walsh of Kilkenny Free Range. Mm. We would have geese and free range ducks. Super products.
Yeah, they are.
Super products. Yeah. I think Mary supplies Chapter 1 in Dublin. She thinks she plays Carath in Campania. So that'll tell you the level of expertise.
And they're very passionate about what they do as well. They love
high welfare.
Yeah.
You know, they're a super product.
Yeah. So. And the thing about goose, I was caught out by goose a few years ago at a big dinner party, and I thought, big, huge, massive bird like that, we'll get 8 or 10 dinners out of it. Yeah. Christ, I was in the kitchen literally kind of scraping meat off the bone to try and feed people. You don't get that many people out of it.
You don't. You're right. They're visually a very big looking bird, very long. But you know, the yield that you get off the meat is not an awful lot. It's a taste. So you wouldn't really be feeding.
Four people really. A big goose would only just feed.
Oh,
four.
A big goose, four people tops.
Yeah. My God, so it's like a chicken dinner, really.
So it makes it very expensive, because I cooked two of them last year for an event, and so that's a lot of money. You know, like they're quite expensive and stuff.
How much would you be looking at for a free-range goose?
Free-range goose, you could be looking, I think, 60 to 80 euro.
Wow, okay. So it is a premium meat.
Oh, it's premium. Mm. It's premium. Mm. But look, it's once a year.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what Christmas is really all about.
Out of it too.
Yeah. Well, that's actually something now. You do get plenty of fat from the goose. And saving that and using it for the roast buds for months afterwards, there's nothing like it.
Different level.
Yeah, absolutely. Take it to another level, isn't that what they say? Did you get any sausages today, Max?
I did, yes.
Because there's a man sitting beside you there who has a very famous recipe for the Lavistown sausages.
I do indeed, yeah.
I'm glad I didn't bring mine in.
You're not gonna give us the secret ingredients from that?
Secret ingredients? No. We'll keep it under wraps for the time being.
Quality ingredients.
But yeah, we carry the four different flavours of Lavistown. We took on Lavistown 12 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
They were out of production for a while. I know Olivia Goodwillie hadn't produced them for a while, and we were carrying free-range pigs, and we were struggling to, you know, with the shoulder end of it, which your pork, your sausage should be made out of. And we were finding it difficult to move them on. So it's the idea kind of came up, and I bought a sausage filler off of Olivia when she finished producing. I was like, okay, let's chat to her about the sausages. Maybe bring back the Lavistown range again. So we sat down and we spoke about it, and so we would use the free-range pork now in the Lavistown range, and we kind of done a little bit of rebranding. And so, yeah, they're going fairly well. They seem to kind of have, you know, their own kind of following.
Yeah, well, they were around for so long, and they were really, I think, the first commercially available sausage that was so different to the supermarket, bland brand.
It's very different.
You could tell there was a bit of love and a bit of care went into
absolutely.
Them. It's good to have them back.
Yeah.
That's great. Now, we've got to go take the weather. The time is absolutely flying. John, you probably have to get back to the shop, do you?
Busy day.
Busy day. And they're listening in the shop there going, he's just sitting there talking about meat. Meanwhile, we're selling it.
Rashers.
We'll have you back in again.
No problem.
John Brown from Grogan & Brown Artisan Butchers in Lockboy. Thanks a million for coming in to us, John. And we'll just take the weather shortly after this. email us on studio@communityradiokilkennycity.ie.
I'm Ken Hawker at Mount Julia Estate, and you're listening to The Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City.
Is there any of that bacon left, Mags, or is it all gone?
No, it's
more. I knew it was dangerous. You taking out the bacon while there was a butcher in the studio. I knew he'd go mad for that. So the poor lad's back in the shop working hard. Poor lad's back in the shop working hard, and he's in here eating the bacon.
He said it was very tasty.
Yeah, no, it's, and compliments indeed when it's like an artisan award winning. I didn't want to go on too much about the awards while he was in here, but Grogan and Brown is picking up awards all over the place. And Butcher of the Year in 2015.
It's a very nicely presented shop too, and they're very friendly and nice in there, in fairness.
And actually, is it Damien? I hope I got his name right. The butcher that I always dealt with in Super Quinn when it was in Market Cross for years and years and years. I see he's joined the team up there now. I walked in the other day to talk to John about coming into us, and the smiliest, friendliest butcher in Kilkenny was behind the counter. No, fabulous, fabulous shop. So I just love going in there. You know, lovely range of stuff and things like that. Now, you were going to talk to us not just about bacon and meat. You've had a busy week making a different kind of meat, mincemeat.
Mincemeat,
but with no meat.
With no meat. Well, traditionally, and they originated, they were made with meat, kind of like a minced lamb type.
I hope you're going to talk about this for a while now, because I'm about to put another big lump of bacon in
my mouth. Yes, that's most of it, actually. That's the whole rasher that's going in.
So you just tell everybody all about the mincemeat now.
And they're really thick, aren't they? Mm. Yeah. So originally, that's what they were. They were made with meat, with some kind of like onions and maybe some vegetables and that. They were made to look like baby Jesus in a. That's what the pastry on top was, like a little blanket on baby Jesus. That was how they started. Now they don't look like that. They often have snowflakes and stars and all sorts of things. So, but they gradually anyway. And like back in fact Victorian times, there was a lot of kind of. Mixing of sweet and savoury. So meat would be cooked in a pie, maybe with like kind of, you know, dried fruit or mixed peely type things, which we wouldn't even like now. I'd find that kind of hard to digest, actually, or to swallow even. So, but anyway, gradually they've turned into, I suppose, greater availability of fruits and that into a fruity pie. And they're made with all sorts of different pastry.
So I love mince pies.
Well, I did bring you in some.
But it's not something I would have all year. I'm glad that it's just kept to Christmas time. You know, it's nice to have that to look forward to, and right the way up maybe to the end of the second week in January, and then it's time to put them
to
bed again.
It's time then, yeah. You've had like 6 weeks of mince pies at that stage, so yeah.
What was that fat we were talking about earlier?
Well, this is all kind of good quality fat, really. The pastry that I use has ground almonds in it and icing sugar, not regular sugar. And you always make your mince, sorry for the crackling and stuff, make your mince meat at least a day before you're going to make mince pies. And mince meat, the one I make, it's not as some people make a cooked one. I don't make a cooked one. It's just all the ingredients assembled in together. So you've like raisins, sultanas, currants, some suet, marmalade.
Yeah. And would that be normal? Would there normally be marmalade in mince pies?
Well,
that's what
there
you
is,
add.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Yes, it works very well, actually.
Sorry, I distracted. Can we go back to the start of that list there again?
So raisins, currants, sultanas, suet.
Well, I ask you a tricky question now, but what's the difference between raisins, sultanas?
they're different grapes.
So raisins, sultanas, and currants, and.
Currants are the little tiny ones. They're my favourite, actually, the little kind of tiny little black ones. Start again. Raisins, sultanas, currants, suet, grated apple, marmalade, lemon juice and lemon zest, dark brown sugar. You'd make like a big pot, big pile of it. The recipe that I actually started off with had, I think, 900 grams of brown sugar, and I remember thinking that is a ridiculous amount of sugar, so I cut it to 500 and it's perfectly nice. That's what I've used ever since. Have I forgotten anything? Mixed peel, and you can make your own, or I've just bought it, to be honest, this year. So they're the ingredients, and you really just put those into a big bowl and give them a good mix. And sorry, whiskey. I almost forgot the whiskey. So for the quantity I used, I think I put in about 150 mils of whiskey. And that gives you an awful lot of mincemeat. I always make jars for friends and family and that. And that's it. So it's a really easy filling. Like, what filling do you make that you don't have to cook anything and stuff? You just put it in a big bowl and mix it up, and then make your pastry. So you can pick, like, you can buy a pastry. So you can buy a puff pastry, and kind of cut it into like squares, and then put your mincemeat in one, like, if you do a line diagonally across the square, put the mincemeat on one side of it, and then fold it over, a little bit of butter to stick it.
Little triangle parcel.
Yeah. Yeah, that looks really nice. Or make little ones in a little bun tin with a little star on top. They're the ones I've made. They're really small, the ones I've made, so you can, like, just little mini ones, so you can have two, really. So you can make, you can buy pastry or make pastry, and you can make different types of pastry.
And the mix you've made up then, the filling, how long will that last?
That'll last a year if you want it.
Really?
Well, if you think about what it is, like, of all the sugar and whiskey and everything in it.
And preserved fruits, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, I always keep some to make hot cross buns at Easter with mincemeat. Sort of, it's really nice, actually. But I know some year I made too much and I kept it until the following year, and that's how I started making mince pies the following year with last year's mincemeat, and it was perfectly good. In a sealed container, it's in a Tupperware.
So this is a job you could kind of do this week, and then you'll be making your mince pies, like, throughout the holidays whenever you have time to do
they
something.
They do keep for a couple of days when you make them, but like everything, it's, they're nice when they're kind of fresh. And you can have some pastry in the fridge for a couple of days. Let's say you've got people coming over a few days, you want to make, you know, have some pastry in the fridge and then, or in the freezer, take it out, make them up.
Well, they freeze as well. I suppose if you were to make them mince pies, you could pop them whole thing into the freezer.
Could. Yeah. I haven't done that actually, but yeah, you could do. Or just have some boiled pastry in the freezer that you can use. Mm. So that would work quite well.
And have you ever counted how many mince pies you'd make over the whole Christmas period?
No.
Would it be in the in the hundreds?
It kind of depends. Well, actually, I was having a chat with the kids about mince pies yesterday, and they don't really like them. So we've now come up with a new children's...
I put that down to poor parenting.
Probably. There's probably a few more things you could put down to that as well. Where we've come up with a new children's pie. Children's Christmas pie.
Oh.
So it's apple and some mixed spice.
Oh.
Yeah.
And have you tried them yet?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, weekend.
Well, I find if you get the kids involved in the making of them, or the making of a dish, or the putting together of a recipe, there's a much better chance of them liking it. You know, so if anybody out there has any kind of kids that are fussy in the fussy eaters, involving them maybe in the making of the menu or making of the dish will probably get them eating it a bit more.
They came up with the apple, so that was their contribution. So yeah, they will eat them and stuff. Because it's not nice to make something if everybody in the house doesn't like it. It's nicer to have something. So we'll have a selection of pies now.
Well, don't worry. Your mince pies won't go to waste. You can bring them in every week.
Thanks.
We'll have them. So we're just going to take a short ad break. And remember, you can get in touch with the show. And please do, if you have any questions or comments, you can text us at this number. Text us on 086 353 7782. Email us on studio@communityradiokilkennycity.ie. And you're very welcome back to The Kitchen Garden with me, Francis Nesbitt, and I'm here with Mags Morrissey. And a big thank you again to John from Grogan and Brand for coming in and talking to us about meats. There was a very complimentary text just came in about the shop. Love that shop, simple as that. So that's nice to hear you. The lads are doing some good things out there in Lockboy. So Mags, we were talking about mince meat and mince pies just before the break. Mm-hmm. Delicious treats for us. But we're thinking about treats for other little creatures around the place at the moment as well, like the really hard frosts of late. The birds are kind of suffering out in the garden.
The little birdies, yeah. Actually, talking about fat and everything, mm-hmm. but I always keep the fat, if I've cooked pork, keep the fat and use it for the birds. So mix it up with seeds and then put it into the bird feeder, and they love it. And that's good for them, actually. Mm. And then you've no waste, so you're kind of happier enough. So yeah, the birds definitely need to be fed by now, actually. And if you haven't fed them, give your bird feeder a good clean out beforehand and make sure seeds are not gone mouldy or awful, mm-hmm. Which does happen sometimes. they really, I think you get, for the amount of food you put out, you get so much enjoyment in that. I got one bird feeder just outside the kitchen window, and to see there was coal tits and grey tits actually the other day, but to see them scrambling and fighting between each other, and you know, one is on and the other is off and vice versa, and that, it's actually it's well worth the money you spend on the seeds actually. So and different foods will attract different birds. So I think it's good to put out a variety. I had some coconuts at Halloween and cut the top off and then filled it with some of the kind of fat and seeds. But the birds are now kind of eating away slowly at the bits of coconut. And I hung that up in a tree, and that's actually quite, can just keep filling it up and stuff. So that's quite good too. The Birdwatch Ireland actually are launching their garden bird survey, which is starting.
Yes, yes.
They do it for December, January, February every year, starting on Monday. So you can have a look on their website, and there's an online form and everything, or you can download a form. And really, they kind of want you just to tell them like what kind of a garden you're in. Are you putting out food or not putting out food? You don't have to. It's whatever you're doing. And then you keep a track every day or as many days as you can during the week of what's in your garden. So they've given a long list of what birds they want you to tell them about. So if a kestrel flies into your garden briefly, they want to know about that. Or if you've got, you know, robins, blackbirds, magpies, jackdaws, all of those, they want. So they do this every year, and then they'll publish the results next Christmas, actually, just before Christmas next year.
And these kind of citizen science surveys are very important, because it gives you a broad spectrum of the kind of populations across the country, and year on year you're able to do comparisons and see which species are suffering or which are doing well.
Yeah, and I suppose they don't have the resources to be doing all of this themselves, and also it does, you know, the whole country is involved, so they will get data from every part of the country. I think there was over 1,000 people took part in it last year, which is very good. Also, I suppose gardens in recent years have become very important habitats for birds, with mm-hmm. changes in agriculture and all sorts of development and that. So it is important that we know what we have in our gardens, and even if it's a pile of jackdaws, it's whatever it is, we need to know. And then I suppose you can make measures to address issues if there's problems, and they'll be able to see if there's a decline. If they're doing it, they'll do it every year, so they'll be able to see what declines there are, and or you know, what bird is suddenly starting to use an urban garden that hasn't used them in the past and that. So it's very interesting, and it's actually a really nice thing to do, because you get completely into it. Because, you know, you're kind of, oh, well, I saw 3 of those last week, maybe I'll see 4 this week, you know. So, and you give your kind of maximum numbers that you saw per week. So you just enter a number for the end of the week.
And the form then, it's on birdwatchireland.ie.
Birdwatch Ireland, yeah.
And does it take long to fill out?
No, not really. No, no. So if you had a little notebook, so during the week you're recording whatever you can, as much as you can. Nobody expects you to be sitting looking out the window watching them all the time. But and then at the end of the week you'll have your figures, you'll have your maximum numbers, and then you fill that into a form at the end.
Once a week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you can do that online, or you can just do a form at the very end in February when you're finished. You have all your, and post it into them or email it to them.
Oh, very good. And how many kind of species are you picking up out at your place?
Well, just like, it's kind of, if I just look from the kitchen window, I would maybe have, I suppose, in a region of 10. Let me think. I get like a lot of house sparrows, which I sometimes think there's too many house sparrows and they're pushing something else out. House sparrows, there's a robin that comes to the kitchen door now, actually. Get some long-tailed tits in the winter, lots of blue tits, but they're mostly in the spring and don't often see them in the winter. Great tits, coal tits, green finches.
Oh, wow, that's a good mix.
Yeah, and then you'll have, you know, magpies and mm-hmm. rooks. I'm not really that keen on those, but there's plenty of them around.
But I think it's when you go looking for them. So if you're taking part in the survey and you're looking out for species to record, you might start to notice things that you didn't notice before, and maybe there's a few things then that you don't even recognise, and you have to kind of go look them up to see what they are.
Yeah,
great way to learn about
it.
The
is
birds.
Great, actually. Yeah, yeah. And actually, there's a pheasant who comes in to feed with the hens the odd day.
I love to see
him.
That.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? Yeah.
I had a limping pheasant for a year, lived out at Crowan. He used to come in, he'd feed with the hens as well, and you could recognise him because he had a really terrible limp.
Yeah,
and he lasted a full year out there with us before moving on. Now, who knows what happened to him in the end. Mm. But it was nice to see him.
Yeah, it is. They're nice. It's nice to see those. It's nice to see a variety. And it's nice to see them kind of mixing in with the more tamer creatures.
One of the things that I have in the folders out at the cottages is I like to put in activities for kids to do, because you'd often have kids coming to stay maybe from a city in England or, you know, somewhere abroad. And so there are some nature things in there for the kids to kind of do, things to look out for. And we started to count the birds that you could see out at Croan. And I think it's up to 36, 37 species of birds now. I'd have to check that again. But a huge number of birds and some very exotic visitors. So an egret came to visit,
oh, yes,
which a few years ago would have stopped traffic, but now they're all over the place.
Yeah, they are. They kind of came into Cork back in the early 90s, I think, and have migrated up the country.
Beautiful bird, snow white plumage, really elegant looking bird. And then buzzards, of course, as well. We've talked about buzzards in here before, lots and lots more of those about than there used to be.
Yeah.
But some of the smaller birds are absolutely stunning in colour. So I saw
goldfinches.
Goldfinches, yeah, gorgeous, and they tend to flock together. So
they
there's
do.
Lots of them.
And I haven't seen as many as I do at the moment. And they laying into my house and stuff. There's a flock of them there all of the time. Quite amazing little birds. They look. I always think they look a bit Picasso-ish or something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And what else?
Gorgeous creatures, and if you're not looking out for them, you know, they move so fast, you might kind of miss that little piece of beauty in your day, you know.
Mm. You do have to train your eye in a little bit and stuff, and sometimes you need to kind of sit down and have a look, and then you'll be surprised at what you see. There's a lot of field fare too around. They're nice birds. They're here only for the winter.
Oh.
Redwing and field fare. Redwing have a tiny little, they look a little bit like a thrush, that type of bird, a little bit of red on their wing, obviously. And they'll kind of flock in, you know, fields or maybe open grassland. That's where you'll see those. And the one thing I don't see an awful lot of around the house is thrushes, actually. I don't know. But you see, that's the kind of information that they want to know, because maybe there's been a decline in thrushes. I don't know.
Mm.
So.
And do you give any details then about where it is that you're counting them from or your environment?
Yeah.
So? Okay.
Yeah, your environment. So what type of garden, what's around, yeah, if you're feeding or not feeding,
whereabouts
you are
nearby,
in the country,
that kind of
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. But it's not massive details, so it's not a daunting form or anything like that. It's quite easy to fill in. It's more kind of tick boxes and stuff.
There's a text message in, what do you do with the fat? So when you're making up the feed for the birds?
Oh, so the fat has come off like a roast or something. Mm-hmm. So I will just let it cool down and it hardens, and then mix the seeds into it. It's a bit of a messy job. Mix it in so that it's kind of mostly seed, but seed is stuck together, like making a fat ball, I suppose, with the fat, and then fill it into the feeder.
And the birds
and
kind of pick away at that.
Peck away at it, yeah.
Oh, very good, okay. And huge energy boost for the birds as well, I suppose.
Yeah.
They use up so much energy.
Yeah.
Small little bodies this time of the year, they need to be taken in food on a kind of continuous
basis.
Well,
and it's particularly cold at the moment, actually, which like last winter, I don't think we'd had this much cold in the whole of the winter and stuff, so it is quite cold.
Mm.
So there are lots of berries out. But even still.
I did hear or read some advice that if you start to feed the birds, they kind of become reliant on you.
Yeah.
So keep it up until the very end of the winter.
Yeah, that's very true. They do. And they, I always think it's amazing when you put out some food within like minutes, they've come from God knows where. But they do become reliant and they'll turn up every morning for food. That's what they get into a habit of. So it is important that you do keep it up.
Comes part of the kind of daily ritual. So
yeah.
I know for myself, I have the feeders at my place just outside the shed in the garden. So as I'm going up to feed the rest of the animals, I can see straight away if they're empty and they need topping up. And I can do that then just when I get back to the shed. And like you said, there's a whole pile of sparrows right down at the house. And as soon as the feed goes in, they're on it in
They
minutes.
Probably hear you going out the door.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they're clever enough, you know.
They
recognise
yeah.
these sounds. They'd know yeah. what's going on. And then the chickens like to hang around underneath those feeders for the little tiny bits of seed that the birds drop.
Yeah.
And they help themselves to them.
That's a bit of a hazard, really, if you have it outside your kitchen door or your door or window.
Oh, keep
that.
It away from the doors. Keep
yeah.
it away from the doors.
And then in next summer, you'll see what's grown underneath your feeder.
Well, it's a very exotic planting,
yeah.
actually. A piece of gravel underneath the feeders earlier in the year. Yeah, but if you've got chickens and stuff about the place, you want to keep it off paths and things like that and get a bit yeah. messy. But no, a beautiful addition to the garden. I really love to have the wild birds about the place. Any other jobs going on at the moment about the place, feeding the birds?
Feeding the birds.
And you've got the pigs back from the butcher. That meat will need a bit of sorting.
That meat needs to be sorted. Yeah, it was a cold day for sorting meat. I had a huge appreciation for...
One of the jobs I'm doing at the moment actually is kind of like checking on the stored stuff in the in the sheds.
What do you have stored?
Well, there's some apples that are still, I'm going through kind of on a weekly basis. And any of those then that need, that have gone a bit bruised or anything, they go out to the birds as well. Very quickly polished off. So the turkeys get the first pick at them. But then if there's too many to go up to the turkeys, the chickens get a pick at them.
And do you give any to the wild birds?
Well, they're about the place. But if whether they can get to them before the chickens do or not is another matter. The goldfinches, I've found, have kind of moved up to where the turkeys are. So I don't know whether they prefer the turkey feed or whether they prefer the fruit that's going into the turkeys up in the field.
But they're mostly seed. Goldfinches are mostly seed eaters. So I'm kind of, I don't know, but then they may adapt.
Mm, beautiful, beautiful creatures, though. I love to see them about the place up there. But yeah, I'm checking the stored fruit and veg and going through seeds. The catalogues are kind of coming out at the moment for the spring. Somebody I saw on Twitter said that there's only less than 3 weeks to go now before the days start to lengthen. Time to start thinking about spring.
You're a bit more organised than I am.
Well, no, I have to admit I wasn't as organised as that person, but they were putting together their wish list for seeds for the new year. But I probably will, if I've an afternoon at the weekend and it's too cold outside, I'll probably go into the potting shed and have a look through some of the old seeds and see what needs.
And how do you know what's good or not?
If you've lots of seed, you can do a germination test. So if it's time to start sowing them and you've a half a packet of seed from last year, the year before, or even the year before that, and you just can't bring yourself to dump them, I'd normally test a few of the seeds. So if you put some of the seeds on a wet piece of kitchen paper and keep it somewhere warm, but not somewhere that it will dry out, then if any of the seeds start to sprout, then you know that the seeds are viable.
Okay.
And if you put 20 seeds or 10 seeds on the piece of paper and only one or two germinate, then you know that you've got to sow 20 or 10 to get an individual plant. So it'll kind of tell you how many of them to use up. But the one thing that you really can't get caught out on is, like, you can't replace time in the garden. You can replace seeds.
And what about the dates on seed packets?
Yeah, it really depends on how you store them. So if you store a seed packet badly, this year's seed will fail. So I often wonder about those seeds that are kept in glass houses, in garden centres, where, you know, it's 30, 35 degrees during the day, you know, during the summer. Buying a packet of those seeds, you're not going to have much success. So really it's about how they're kept rather than how long they've been
kept. So generally they want to be kept in cool, dark.
Keep them cool and dark, yeah. And you know, the weeds in your garden, if they've been underneath the ground, you turn over the soil, they might have been there for a dozen years and they start popping up again. You know, the seed's job is to stay viable. But if you store them badly, they'll soon go off. But we're all out of time again this week. That are absolutely flew in. We'll have to talk some more about kitchen food or Christmas food and stuff in the coming weeks. But next week, we won't be live in the studio here. We'll be live downtown with the rest of the lads for the official launch day, I suppose, of the community radio. So we're live on High Street all day next Friday. That's the 8th of December. In the meantime, you can keep in touch with us on Twitter. I'm at NesbittF and Mags is at Mags Morrissey. Or you can email the show, thekitchengarden@crkc.ie. Be sure to send us in any comments, tips or questions and we'll get to them on our next visit to the kitchen garden. This show is repeated on Monday at 4 and we'll be out on High Street next Friday as part of the official launch, as I said. Until then, we're going to leave you with a piece of music. This is My December by Linkin Park. Have a good week. December. This is all so clear.